Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. This is Doug. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Doug. Nice to talk to you today.
It's wonderful to talk to you and to be alive in this exciting time. We are cursed to live in interesting times, as they say. So today is a blockbuster show, as usual, but this particular thing I'm going to rant on about for a minute because what you've done here is a 35-page report on showing that Columbia University is the home of the Pilgrims here in America, Pilgrim Society, which is, in fact, the answer to the solution of unanswered conspiracy theories. But I also first want to give a shout-out and thank Betsy and her team for putting on Gab, Tyla, this amazing thing that I guess one of your fans did. They went back and took a bunch of your articles and research that you and the miners have done and all the staff writers at Americans for Innovation, put it into a book format. So literally, this is a book which tells the true history of our times, which impacts it today because it's the same people doing the same thing. And if you don't know this, then you're, you know, basically being controlled as a slave by unseen puppeteers. Well, these are the puppet masters, and it's an astounding thing you did. And I want to just say congratulations. I know you didn't put it in that particular order so that it looks like an ebook. But for those who don't have a good history book to read, because there are very few of them, this is the best place you can start. And in my opinion, this makes the research that Mike and the miners are doing to be equivalent to Carol Quigley or Eustace Mullins to reveal the true strings of control, the real leverage points, the exact corporate dynasty families. And especially in this particular podcast, we're going to talk about the way that American education is basically been used as a way to groom the people that the British wanted to become members of their Pilgrim Society and carry out the wishes of Cecil Rhodes and the British imperialists. So can you tell us, this list is astounding. When you told me all these people who were connected to Columbia, you know, there's like five presidents who have gone through Columbia, right? And who are they? They're the ones that are the most corrupt. You know, it's Barack Obama. Remember, he followed his boyfriend, Bill Ayers, there. He says he went there. You know, he used an alias at the time, Barry Sotero, and also Dwight Eisenhower. And, of course, in your report, you clearly point out that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, went there. And Theodore Roosevelt went there. So this is a pilgrim breeding ground for the people who are in positions of power and control in America that are astounding, right up to the president and even beyond the president. For instance, Donovan was bunk buddies with William Stevenson, and he got to determine what British intelligence would be shared with the president or not during the war. That's how powerful these people are. So this report is amazing, and the list of these culprits is astounding because now we get to see all the interlocking connections so that the Anglo-American society, or what they call now Atlanticists, people who believe that Britain still rules America, these are the people, and we can now trace back the conspiracy history to reality history. So tell us about your research. It's so exciting.
Well, it's been one of those things, as we know, it's been an evolution, and hindsight is 20/20. We can see now that in our research, we picked bookends. We had the current experience of this organization stealing our social networking invention in the current history, and then we started looking back into history to see when the seeds of modern technology and wireless technology began emerging in the late 1800s. And so what has been happening in the research as we have been unpacking this Russian nested doll to see what was in the middle. And in the last post at Americans for Innovation, it was post part one, because we had discovered that we had never actually looked at the origins of the CIA beyond all of the propaganda that's out there that it was started by a guy by the name of Wild Bill Donovan, and he was the most decorated military man in World War I, and yada, yada, yada. Well, in summary, we've discovered that that entire narrative was a lie, is a lie. And so we started looking at, okay, well, who really was Wild Bill Donovan? And that led us to Columbia, because he became a student of Columbia in 1903. And we had people who dug up all of the yearbooks from Columbia, starting about in 1899 all the way through about 1915, and began looking at the context for who was working in Columbia or at Columbia at the time that Bill Donovan was there. And oh my gosh, was this a revelation? And we can't believe that we had missed this before. We had seen a lot of these names pop up in other contexts related to the British Pilgrim Society, but never so directly. And we discovered that Bill Donovan was one of the kingpins. He was essentially the handpicked representative of the British Pilgrim Society in the United States from its foundation in 1902 in London and 1903 in January in New York. And as we began to look at Donovan's experiences as an undergrad and a grad at Columbia Law, we started seeing other figures pop up who were a part of the Pilgrim Society at the time, at its foundation. And as it turns out, there are no less than 10 individuals associated with Columbia University that were founding pilgrims that were hovering over and around Wild Bill Donovan when he was a student between 1903 and 1907. And last year of law school, he was still playing football somehow as a grad student. And his classmate in Columbia's law was none other than Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And then we see that the president of Columbia was a man by the name of Nicholas Murray Butler. And his name figures very prominently in the Pilgrim Society histories. Although when you actually look at his bios, they've done a very good job in the archives of low-keying his involvement with the Pilgrims, although it was so prominent they couldn't avoid it. And then there were other professors and lecturers. And during this time, one of the founders of the Pilgrim Society in 1902 in London, Elihu Root, came there and was the honorary speaker at Wild Bill Donovan's graduation. That reminded us of Pompeo graduating from West Point and seeing Caspar Weinberger, another Pilgrims player, get an honorary degree from West Point and also become the speaker. So what we see here is a pattern. When the Pilgrim Society is recruiting somebody to be the next generation, they spend a lot of time grooming them and put them only with certain people. And that's what we saw out of this as one of the many revelations. And let me talk about another one on a totally different level, Douglas, because I remembered very distinctly talking with you about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and you said, boy, it doesn't look like anybody's in charge of the deep state or the Pilgrim Society. It looks like it just kind of runs on its own. And that really got us to thinking about the another area that you have educated us a lot on relative to the spiritual world, and specifically the hierarchies of demons and devils in the area of Satan worship. And you introduced two concepts, one specters and another one phantoms. And as you describe, phantoms are what form around a person when they tell a lie that's for which they're unrepentant of. And they tell another lie, the specter, the phantom grows, they keep telling lies, the phantom gets very powerful. And then as these phantoms then team up, they become specters, and those specters then, if in power, can actually affect the writing of laws. And once a specter affects the writing of a law, that effectively means your country is then subject to the demons of that specter, and therefore you start marching your country off into what is generally referred to as Satanism or Luciferianism. And as we now know, these people recognized that they were being led by these phantoms, these specters, these demons. And it dawned on us, wait a second. In the time of Cecil Rhodes and W.T. Stead, Stead was a huge proponent of Satanism, of spiritualism, of necromancy, speaking to the dead, spirit writing, all these sort of Victorian notions of a spiritual world were all very much in the mainstream of the newspapers of the day. And specifically W.T. Stead, who was Cecil Rhodes' biographer and his first heir, by the way, and his first will, popularized and actually spoke about very prominently. And that led us to look more at W.T. Stead, and we discover that just a few months before the first Imperial press conference in 1909, Stead actually announced that he was forming a new company called Julia's Bureau, and that he was taking instructions from his friend Julia, who had died, and that he was the medium that was essentially carrying out her orders in the creation of this ability to speak with the dead. And it is most certain that if he was advertising that so prominently, then he was talking to the spirit of Cecil Rhodes. And that would have been his ultimate hero. And I'm certain that all these players that worked with Cecil Rhodes at the time of the formation of the Pilgrim Society would have also wanted to talk to him. And as we now can see, it appears that you may be right, that there may be no person running this deep state / Pilgrim Society, but rather we're seeing the specters that were created out of the sins and the lies of these people as they were layered on future generations have created laws both in our country and in Britain that are in fact driving the spiritual entity. These spiritual specters and their demons are driving the decisions that are occurring today. And another confirmation that we have that that's probably what's happening is that in 1912, the suffragette Lillian Scott Troy actually found a 24-step strategy, written strategy of the Pilgrims for the retaking of America. And wouldn't you know it, to a point, they are still carrying out those exact items to this day.
Which includes pharmaceutical warfare upon those who are being led from Fabianism to socialism to communism, all by these imperialists. And these are literally English-speaking white supremacists, imperialists, who are into depopulation and eugenics. And the home of this now, we can see, is Columbia University. And the power of education to develop the ability to train people, groom them to lie, to be professional liars, to develop them these specters, these conglomerates of lies, and then to move into politics and make them into law when nobody's looking. Now, if you look at Columbia University, they brag of literally hundreds of people who left Columbia University and went straight to Washington, D.C. and held major positions of power, whether from attorney generals to Supreme Court justices to presidents to vice presidents, you name it. They came out of Columbia University, this home of liberalism, And what is it? Columbia is the name given to a female being who represents the freedom of America based upon supposedly Columbus discovering America. So Columbus, Colombo, Columbia. And she stands, of course, on top of the Capitol. Sometimes she's called Lady Justice, but really her name is Columbia. So to have this university basically deprecated to turn into complete evil and basically should be called Britannia, not Columbia. It should be called the home of the British here in America as they are developing the ideas that become lies that become so ensconced in the students in the school, and particularly in their law school, that those then come out and become so powerful that the intentions of the Pilgrim Society has now been ensconced in law. It is now law in America. Take, for instance, the pandemic laws. These pandemic laws, as I call them, preparedness laws, which are controlled through the Department of Human Services, Health and Human Services. These laws are actually written by the very people who are the lobbyists for the pharmaceutical companies. And who owns the pharmaceutical companies? Well, that would be Lord Pirbright, because it was the Pirbright Institute that actually has a patent on coronavirus. And then the Muriel Animal Hospital, they put vaccines in the food for animals all over the world. All kinds of animals, farm animals, domestic animals. No one ever asked them to put vaccines in the food. So what else are they putting in the food? And then, of course, they carry it out with their new spy mechanism called Kinetic. And all three of those have major headquarters in China, right down the street from Wuhan. And that's who it is that brought this attack upon us. But it's one of many, many attacks. They have been trying to perfect their pharmaceutical World War III, or basically just a continuous attack against human beings, since they started developing it in the Transvaal through Cecil Rhodes and his minions.
Well, you mentioned the medical tyranny issue related to Columbia. And what we remember back when we were first discovering this first Imperial Press Conference, which was started by the Pilgrims in 1909, they passed out this other book that was financed and sponsored by Henry Wellcome, Burroughs Wellcome, which is now GlaxoSmithKline. And they gave the members, 650 members of the British press all over the world, this book. And it was essentially a how-to handbook on using Wellcome's medicine chest, which included all of these fake virus test viruses that we now know today were poisoned. That's all they were, is poisons. And they were giving these to all of the press people as they went around the world. And then they were asking for feedback. They were saying, use this and then tell us what happens. And then if you find any more really cool types of medicine or poisons, send them to us and we'll collect them here in London. That was going on at the same time. So what we now see is this, they've carried forward the same priority they had at the turn of the century, which was to change the nature of warfare from a kinetic warfare to biological and chemical warfare, and then to use radio technologies, i.e. from invented by Nikola Tesla and then hijacked by Marconi and the British Post Office and the British Admiralty, to fuse these technologies together somehow into something they predicted as early as 1923 would be the future of war, which would be biological, chemical, and radiological, that would last only a few minutes because they would be able to take everybody out. That was their vision then. That was their vision at Columbia University from the beginning. And let me illustrate how centrally now Columbia has to play a large portion of this revelation about the control of the Pilgrim Society over the world. Do you recall who the current CIA director is and where he worked the last time before he became CIA director?
No.
I don't remember his name, but he was the president of the Carnegie Endowment for international peace. The current CIA director came out of Carnegie. Now, if we look at the president of Columbia at the time that William J. Donovan went there as a student, his name is Nicholas Murray Butler. And when you look at the positions he's held, and by the way, even his bios on Wikipedia couldn't ignore the idea that he was an arrogant man, and they said he was prone to interminable miasmas of guff. That was the term back then for something probably we would say full of whatever. So anyway, here are the positions this man held at the time of the formation of the Pilgrim Society in the U.S. First of all, he was a member. He was a founder of the British version in 1902, and he carried on throughout his life until his death in 46. He was the president of Columbia University that same year, 1902. He remained the president of Columbia University up until 1945, the end of World War II. He was the founder of the American branch of the British Pilgrim Society in 1903. Which he remained a member until 45. He recruited and groomed William Donovan, who was, by the way, John Rockefeller's protege, and also Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who were in law school together. He was a co-organizer of the Pilgrim's first Imperial Press Conference in 1909. He was a co-founder, therefore, of MI6, MI5, and GCHQ in the UK. It was called GCCS back then. And they were specifically recruiting newspaper men from America and New York and around the Commonwealth to be the first agents of the MI6. This is way before the CIA or any of our American intelligence capabilities. He was the overlord over David Sarnoff, Guglielmo Marconi, and British Marconi Wireless when they started in 1919, at the order, by the way, of then Deputy Undersecretary of the Navy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, his former student. He was a co-founder of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in 1910. He was the one that actually encouraged Carnegie to put up $10 million to start the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. He was the overlord over the Carnegie Foundation in its rewriting of the history books, university books, and libraries, the rewriting of British history, so that we would not have a negative view of the tyranny that we had overcome in the American Revolution. And actually, they've been pretty successful at that, and you as educators can probably tell us a lot more detail about how successful that propaganda was. But he was the overlord, this president of Columbia University, Nicholas Murray Butler. He sanctioned, his student sanctioned J. Edgar Hoover. And his student was Harlan F. Stone, who was both Roosevelt and Donovan's professor. And Stone later became Attorney General, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court in 1925. He then was made Chief Justice in 1941 under Roosevelt. So clearly Stone was one of those players that knew too much, because at the end of the war, he died. He was the president of the Carnegie Endowment from 1925 to 46. He was also the president of the Pilgrim Society between 1928 and 1946. Therefore, he was the overlord of the OSS, the CIA, and he would have been the overlord for the special relationship between Britain and America that was the secret Five Eyes Agreement that not too many people were to know about. So the interesting thing about all these guys is that after they were instrumental in setting up some major institution of the Pilgrim Society, either in London or in New York, they died. And so there were a lot of these guys that got knocked off in 46, right as the Five Eyes group was being set up. So what we can see here is that Five Eyes was a special secret police set up by the British Pilgrim Society to be paid for by America and run by British MI6. And it was all orchestrated out of Columbia University at the same time as they were assisting the rewriting of America's history of Britain and rewriting all the propaganda, writing into our histories all the propaganda. So I, for one, was an engineering student. I hated history. I couldn't read it. I couldn't stand it. It didn't make any sense to me. And now I know I was right. It's because it was all a lie. And probably my spidey sense figured it was a lie, so I didn't really want to get interested in it. And now, like, I mean, I'm a history nerd. But that's because true history tells a story and it's interesting. Fake history tells platitudes and wants to give us impressions about people. But when you actually dig into these stories, they don't hold water. And in this case, Columbia University, we can see, is the breeding ground for the deep state in America. There is no question. Breeding ground and the current director. Harvard and Yale, the others, they're a part of it too. But this is the center.
It's a great discovery to find out that Columbia is basically the home of British intelligence still controlling America. It's the grooming center for the training of politicians or political leaders who then become puppets to this concept of the special relationship. And as you pointed out, that's the Five Eyes Agreement, which was before William Donovan helped start the OSS and the CIA in Britain, which was always, from the very beginning, a British operation. And then through William Stevenson, even what the OSS, the CIA, and later Five Eyes, what they were able to glean as intelligence still had to be filtered through William Stevenson before it could go to the President of the United States. Now, that is disgusting. But it shows that this type of grooming has been going on a long time.
Yes.
And certainly in the city or in London, we can see that a favorite character you've brought out, Philip Whitwell Wilson, he basically was the father of training isms. So whether it be carrying on the work of Jeremy Bentham or Giuseppe Mazzini or Moses Hess or Marx and Engels or Stalin or Trotsky or Lenin, they were all trained in London.
Yep.
Okay, folks? Every evil that you know in the modern world, including the fascism of the Nazis, the fascism of the Italians, of the Spanish, these type of isms were all part of the program, because the imperialists, the elite white supremacists, said, we're going to let the common people think they're going to get everything they need to live, just exactly as Klaus Schwab tells us now. We're not going to own anything, and we're going to be happy about it. And we're going to be part of his new revolution, which makes his family a lot of money. And the 3,000 people who were invited to Davos are all criminal, horrible criminals at stealing economic fortunes, whether it's not paying taxes, which we've been saying, how long have we pointed out that everyone at the IRS should be fired because none of them have turned in George Soros for not paying taxes? Now we find out that just in the last 3 years, when he gave away $84 billion, that was all tax-free money. He didn't pay a dime. None of the big companies who have monopolies pay any taxes. This is all part of the Columbia British training to make the rich elite into what would be considered like aristocracy of the British monarchy. And whether or not you want to talk about Fabianism, which this is to placate the masses, folks. Communism, Zionism. When you say communism, you're saying Zionism. You're not, and that is not saying that the Hebrew people are bad. No, Zionism is a political movement which was allowed to continue in Germany when many of the Jews were rounded up and taken to the concentration camps. Zionism continued, and then the Balfour Declaration said Zionism gets to have, we're just going to take a part of Palestine. But remember,
let me stop you, when we say Zionism, we say British Zionism. And the Balfour and Lord Rothschild, who everybody points to as the origins of the Balfour Declaration, they were both founders of the Pilgrim Society. So what we've got to say the word, we've got to stop saying deep state. We have to start saying the Pilgrim Society, because until we call the enemy out, we will not be able to defeat them. Now, if I could, I'm not sure which way you wanted to go in this conversation, but if I could direct us back to the issue of phantoms and specters. I'd like you to expound on that a little bit more, because, you know, when I was in Christian ministry, I mean, I'm still in Christian ministry, it's our lives, but when I was doing it full time, I was more focused on the positive side of this message and not so focused on becoming an expert in the satanic realm. What really struck me in your comment a couple weeks ago is that is in fact the pattern we're seeing worldwide, that we're, you know, the Bible says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. I think it's Ephesians 6, if I recall right. And this is exactly what we're seeing here in this cabal at Columbia University in the 1900s. These guys were setting up America to be taken down by the British Empire. And they were willingly doing it. These were all called Anglophiles at the time. They were very proud of their associations with England and Harvard, and not Harvard, but Oxford and Cambridge and St. Andrews up in Scotland. And there were people at the time who saw these people as being these Anglophiles that were traitorous to America. But that never got any traction, because what we see now is that all of the judicial system had already been taken over by the Inns of Court in London. And so our laws, our judicial system, our justices, our law schools were already under the spell of this specter of Cecil Rhodes. They were in love with the specter of Cecil Rhodes. And so can you talk about, okay, so I get the idea of a specter being created out of somebody's philosophy, which is inherently evil. But then how do demons arise out of a specter? Because we hear more about demonic activity than we do specters.
Well, you, Michael McKibben, opened this can of worms, and so I'm going to get to address it. I wouldn't have brought this topic up too much, except in talks where I'm referring to things where people might have certain beliefs, and some of these terms go back to Christian hierarchical terms. They're basically the Christian hierarchy. And so when the Bible says that we're fighting against powers and principalities, powers are actually beings called the Elohim or the Exousiai. They're actually the sixth rank down from the top and fourth from the bottom and out of the nine hierarchies. And when you say principalities, you're actually referring to the beings called mites. So there's powers, mites, and dominions, which are referred to in the Bible, but they also refer to principalities, the sons of fire. They refer to time spirits in a variety of ways. So you have these hierarchical beings. Now, this is going to lose a lot of people. A lot of people will go, no, I'm not going to believe any of that. But so I'll try to put it in not so Christian terms. But
People can see evil. See evil, even if they don't want to get into a detailed discussion of this. The fact is, every human being, just common sense, instinctively can see evil, or absolutely, can see when somebody's doing something evil. That's what we're talking about here.
Yes,
I mean, let's give it a few more names and call it out, because I think in doing that, if people can focus their prayer life on specifically calling out these evil beings, then in my experience, great things begin to happen. We unleash the powers of the good, the angels, to do things that they may have been confounded by, because we're asleep.
Oh, yes. So when you look at somebody, no matter what you believe, you can see whether they have light or darkness around them. The more light, the more their personal angel, guardian angel, is bringing that light forward. And the more dark, the more a phantom is in darkening that soul. And basically, the darkening of the soul is because every time you lie, or every time you hurt someone, or you do anything bad, it creates darkness around you. That's your bad karma that you're going to have to pay off. So if there's been movies that have depicted what happens when somebody evil dies, and all these black spirits come and rip the body apart, the soul apart, Yes, that's basically exactly what happens. But when a person who's a pure of heart dies, what do they experience? Well, they meet all their relatives that they love, and they're in a surrounded by light, unimaginable light, you know, the stories we hear from near-death experiences. So we have different beings. Now, these beings can, in the hierarchies, they can advance or they can fall back. They can be fallen like Lucifer, or they can advance over time. So right now, we as humans have a chance to advance to either be angels or fall back and become animals. The people with the dark phantoms from all the evil they've done and the lies they've told are becoming animals. And many people have pointed out that in our day and age, they look like the animals that they are in fact acting like. And that's the reason they say Queen Elizabeth is a reptile, because the reptilian brain is not human. It's not the mammalian brain, which is the midbrain, and it's not the forebrain, the neocortex, which is human. It is animal. It is reptilian. So to say that these people who kill mercilessly, who are depopulationists, who are eugenicists, who are these imperialists that we've been describing, including the monarchy of England, which is really the monarchy of Germany. But anyway, the point is they have become like the animals that they act like, and they have darkened their soul and their spirit so that the phantoms hover around them. Now, if they
You said karma and you said phantoms. Is that the same thing?
No, a phantom is a negative karma, but yes, it is. And then your guardian angel holds, or your etheric body holds the memory of what you've done that's good or bad. And so one could say that, you know, there's the light and dark side of that. Karma has good, and, you know, there's also very good karma. It's not always paying back bad karma. So there's two different sides to that. And that happens with every single decision made by every person at whatever level they're at. But if they're a leader and their lies then become convincing enough that they can convince other people, those become specters. And those specters can move out and literally take over a nation, like Hitler's rhetoric, his propaganda, his specters, his lies spread out over all of Germany until pretty soon they didn't even know that they were lies. They loved Hitler. They loved what he had done. They loved hearing him speak, okay? So that's how powerful a specter can become. Then it can become worldwide. But once that the people who are part of these lies, who already have phantoms around them and believe in the specters, which they know are lies, they turn them into laws. Well, that's what happened in Germany. The Nazis started passing laws that turned Germany into fascism, and they used communism as the excuse. We still use communism as the excuse. Russia is our enemy. China is our enemy. Communism. Those were all created. Mao Zedong, communist China, communist Russia, those are British creations and British funded. So when we're talking about these isms, none of the isms have ever worked. They are nothing but opiates for the masses, the opium for the masses. It is simply trying to keep the masses happy so that they become happy consumers until they can then be eliminated, because we have too many people on the earth, according to the rich people. And that's what isms are really all about. It always turns into two different groups. The people like in the Zionists who became the Bolsheviks, they were all Jews. Most of them changed their name. They were inspired by Moses Hess, remember? Remember Marx and Engels? Well, Marx was a Jew. Lenin was a Jew. They were all Jewish Zionists, but they weren't really Jews. They didn't believe in the Jewish faith, and that's the part. So then people then say, oh, they're Khazarian Jews. Well, they aren't all Khazarian Jews. But yes, Khazarian Jews weren't Jews. They got a choice to choose between religions because they were so awful, and they chose Judaism. So the Khazarian Jews, the Khazarian Mafia to this very day, there's many names for it, but it changes over time. So you can't just say Khazarian Jews or the Illuminati or this or that. You have to go into the exact people. And it was Philip Whitwell Wilson who trained a number of these fascist, Zionist, communists in London. And it was, of course, then the people at Columbia who trained Americans to make it look like they were Americans, but they were really spies committing treason because they were for British rule, and that British never stopped ruling America. The first revolution was not won, and Columbia University is a perfect example of that. And you have even Walter Rothschild showing up at Columbia. You have Elihu Root showing up at Columbia. You have J.P. Morgan, people that were on the board, people that taught there, people who went to school there. They were all indoctrinated. One could say that it is really, we sometimes call it, I call it, the rogue CIA, but that's not right. They're British Pilgrim Society members who clearly have laid out their plan, as you just pointed out. It's a 200-year plan. They're well into it, and they have done a great job. The only thing is that recently they rushed their plan with the pharmaceutical World War III, and it looks like they're now revealing who they are. But at Columbia University, that's an excuse for nothing more than becoming faithful subjects of the British crown.
Right. And so let's focus specifically on the laws, if we could, because that I experienced this personally. I watched the federal courts all the way up to the Supreme Court circle the wagons around protecting Facebook. And what we now see is that Facebook was nothing but an extension of the Marconi ripoff of Tesla. And they ripped it off from me too, because they had certain technologies way back in the late 1800s forward that they believed they had to control and have a complete monopoly on. And one of them was global communications, because that gave them then the control over propaganda, and they could push a common message out throughout the world. And this just was reminded of it to us afresh when we were looking up some of the newspaper articles with these people. And there would be certain articles that you could see across the board, no matter where you looked in the world, it would be the same newspaper article about that person. So the propaganda they pushed out on these pilgrims was consistent and universal. And in most cases, it was the only information that one could find, except when they had obituaries and things like this, where people were actually writing something. And so the idea that they could do this with laws clearly is something that emerged out of what I equate Columbia with Oxford. So Oxford was in the pocket of the Pilgrim Society in 1902. And in 1903, they needed an American instance of Oxford, and they made it Columbia. We always thought it might be Harvard, and Harvard's right up there, but it's not the same, because all of these pilgrims congregated at Columbia around the time that they selected William J. Donovan to run their American operation, which would include intelligence, which would include biochemical weaponry, would include propaganda and a re-education of the entire workforce. There's also the very first, I need to mention another person. His name was Wayne Codman Potter, and he was the Bishop of New York. And as it turns out, he was an Anglophile that attended or had honorary degrees in most of the major British and American universities. And as it turns out, he was a key proponent of the social gospel, which we could say today was equivalent to John Ruskin and his early versions of communism back in Britain, and became liberation theology, which is a very favorite Jesuit promotion. But here we have him being made the first president of the Pilgrim Society in 1903 in the U.S., the proponent of the social gospel. So what we see is this spiritualist strain at every aspect of the life of the pilgrims as they ensconce their power throughout the United States. So way before World War I, we see them taking over. So by 1912, J.P. Morgan died, by the way, in 1913. In 1912, they had instructed him, the pilgrims had instructed him to take over editorial control of all major newspapers in the U.S. And that's exactly what he did with his cash. And initially, he thought he was going to have to buy up hundreds of papers. But as they finally consolidated it down, they determined that they could take over about 30 institutions and pretty much cover the landscape. And so we see the Pilgrims taking charge of the United States. And if we'll recall, 1913 was also the formation of the Federal Reserve. We can see that's when Carnegie was spending money like crazy, like water, to buy up control through donations of our major libraries and our institutions and buy up all of our publishing houses. And so when people don't think that, it's hard to think that there would be a group of people be this evil at this scale. And what we have to recognize is the British weren't new at this. Americans may have been, but the British had been doing this for many hundreds of years through the British East India Company and their raping and pillaging of the resources of the rest of the world. So this was another day at the office for the British Pilgrims. And our American Pilgrims were always catching up. And what we now see, and thanks to William J. Donovan, is he was recruited by the Pilgrims to do whatever they wanted him to do. And some of his early assignments were to work for the Rockefeller Foundation. And then another assignment was to work for J.P. Morgan's first corporation that he formed after the Federal Reserve. And yada, yada, yada. So for the first 20, 30 years, he was doing intelligence, but primarily out of the Carnegie Foundation. And one of the things we have to realize is when we started looking up the archives of the Carnegie Foundation, guess where they are? They're at Columbia University. So they're all tied together. I heard a well-known talk show host today say it all runs back to the Carnegie Foundation. Well, that person's getting closer. But what they really need to start saying is not an element of the Pilgrim Society, but the Pilgrim Society itself, because that is the core of what we call the deep state. And we see that as the specter of Cecil Rhodes, the evil demons of Cecil Rhodes fanned out across the world, setting up their power institutions, seizing control of the major institutions of that society, and then laying down these specters that created these demons that became laws. And so what we're now suffering from is evil laws. So we've got some work to do.
We oftentimes say, oh, can that be true? That's too horrible. It can't possibly be true. Can't be true. And then we say, okay, wait a second. Let's see if it is legally possible. And then you find out that someone passed a law that nobody knows about that makes evil absolutely real. And those are fallen archangels. Those are, if they're just for a nation, and those fallen archangels are folk spirits. And then you can also get fallen time spirits. So right now, time came to a standstill because of the pharmaceutical World War III. That was because it was a direct attack on the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, or the time spirits that are called the Archai, or the Sons of Fire, Sons of Twilight. So there's all kinds of different names for these beings, but remember that at all levels, these beings can fall backwards. So you're not just dealing with a human who's inspired by their own evil. No, they're inspired by the evil of sometimes beings that are multiple ranks above them. They may not even know what it is they're saying, but they're still inspired by it. Now, I want to point out that Cecil Rhodes' secret society was called the Society of the Elect. They had a super inner group that had N.M. Rothschild, Lord Rosebery, another Rothschild, Lord Purbright, another Rothschild. In other words, Cecil Rhodes and three of the richest people, those are about the four richest people in the world at that time, were the inner group. And then they drew in all these other people until they had total control over the parliament. They had total control over the Privy Council because they had the money that was driving the whole world, what used to be called empire building, and then it became colonialism, and then it became imperialism. And imperialism basically says, we're better than an empire, and all you colonies must kowtow to us. But that was a secret society, right? So it went from being a secret society to later in America, being the Skull and Bones at Yale and Harvard, their secret societies. But now at Columbia, who would have known? When you think about it, it's as simple as this. The secret societies became public. And what we know is the Pilgrim Society, which was touted as nothing more than the dinner parties for ambassadors between America and England and other countries. It was supposed to be a dinner party. That's all. No, it was the biggest corrupt group of people who wanted to take over the world with literally white supremacy. I'm sorry to have to say that, but everyone who's, you know, yelling about white supremacy, they're not looking in the right place. So the secret society became public. Columbia became the grooming grounds for British intelligence. Our own top people, William Donovan, was a complete spy and completely he kowtowed to the Queen and he kowtowed to the monarchy. And Columbia became an open anti-American British grooming intelligence group, and that then merged right into being the same exact people who later Elihu Root, Colonel House and Wilson, all of them were to begin with. But later, when the League of Nations couldn't get through and the United Nations started, the United Nations is Britain. Don't forget that. So it's now open. And how did they control America? Through the Council on Foreign Relations. And then ultimately by stealing patents, because that's where the big money is. That's where the war is. That's where you can always claim national security issues. But the venture capitalists who sit in the DARPA and the NQTEL meetings with Highlands Forum, well, they're British. And the companies that are there are the Golden Share, Rockwell and others, are owned by the Queen. So when it comes down to it, what was a secret society that even tried to overtake the British monarchy's Privy Council and all of its devious machinations of its members, literally then became a war. And I believe at this point, now they have become one. And the Pilgrim Society operates now not as underneath the William Donovan flag, false flag. It now has its own
nonprofit.
Yeah, it's not
profit. It's nonprofit. As early as 2003, it was still operating under the William J. Donovan Memorial Fund.
So now we don't have secret societies and societies of the elect. We have the Carnegie Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rothschild puppets, as we see at Columbia. You had Walter Rothschild himself there. You had J.P. Morgan, who was a Rothschild agent. You had all these people who directly worked for just a few people, a handful of people who no longer even needed to be the Society of the Elect, the secret society of Cecil Rhodes. They do it openly because the demonic laws allow it to happen. Wait a second. I'm getting a psychic impression. I think I'm feeling the great mind of John Barnwell hovering over us. Maybe we made a mistake and he's going to call us and tell us.
Is that really you, John?
Yeah, we hacked your system, and we just want to let you know that we know what you're up to.
By John's the way, got a CIA hat on, and he hacked our systems. Well, that's okay because I don't have any systems, and anything I say is completely it's open, it's public knowledge. The only thing is that I say it in a vicious way, and so you know I hurt the feelings of those CIA members. So your CIA hat, did you get that from Bill Donovan himself or what?
No, actually, I found it at Salvation Army.
They're on hard times.
Which may be CIA headquarters. I'm not
true.
Sure.
That is true. Yeah.
It might be the new headquarters. So, John, have you been listening to the broadcast? What do you have to add to what we said?
I was out, and then I thought maybe you sent me. Oh, speak up. Yeah. Well, I got the volume up. I was out and about, and I got this wonderful link from the adventurous Tyla, and I thought, well, maybe they sent it by accident because you didn't say anything to prepare me for any of this. But as seeing as how we communicate on a daily basis, I think there's enough ground to sprout something here. I think you have to keep in mind that the whole systemic system that's laid out coming out of the crown, it's all centered around NGOs, non-government organizations, and that you have deniable culpability and layers of corporate entities and secret accounts. And, you know, the CIA itself owns over 2,000 corporations that we know of. And there's probably, if you chase down that rabbit hole and all the subsidiaries and shell corporations, and it's just massive. And so basically what we're looking at is people vying for a seat at the table. And talking to a friend of mine from London, and he's talking about the square mile, where this central function of the world economic system exists at this point, especially since they took down the Twin Towers and eliminated some of the major bond traders that were located within the Twin Towers, and eliminated a lot of the documents that were hidden away or being stored in Building 7. So we know that they've been at this a long time, and that it's a systemic problem. It's not a national problem. And I think our real opposition really is materialism. It's not any particular political persuasion. It's materialism, utilitarianism. That what's the most efficient way to gather more control.
Well, that's right. That's right. And, you know, for being a CIA agent, that was actually very insightful on your part there, John. Now, I was trying to wrap up here because we're coming to the end of the hour, but essentially what we're seeing in this 35-page report that Mike and the Miners did is that Columbia University has been revealed for the treasonous anti-American nature that it promulgates and brainwashes people with. So was there anybody on that list that you wanted to highlight? I was amazed by the fact that so many people were Pilgrim Society members at the same time that they were running churches, that they were teaching at three different levels at Columbia University, working in the American government, working in high finance. So it seems as if Columbia University is not really a university. It's just a intelligence grooming agency.
It's a collection of grifters. I mean, it's really clear that these people were going to use this university platform to be the academic shell that would allow them to organize their work in New York to consolidate power. And Butler, if you read his history, he knew he had the power of the country in his hand, and hence he was running most of these institutions. So we see one person who ran the Carnegie Foundation at the same time as he was running the Pilgrim Society. And now we see the Carnegie. I ran into the Carnegie Institution for the first time in 1993 when they sponsored a conference that my future patent attorney helped organize with John Podesta, where they were working to give the FBI a backdoor key to all transactions on the internet. And I said, well, what's the Carnegie Foundation have to do with encryption? Now we know. The Carnegie Foundation is one of the primary, as John said, NGO funding mechanisms for this activity to take down America. And so they have plenty of nonprofit ways, educational nonprofit ways, to hide their treachery across the society. And they have unlimited money to put out fake PR that makes them sound like Boy Scouts, when in fact they're devils and they're demons. And so now that is coming out, I think it's really telling the timing of this, because what I think we need as patriots is we need the lingo of these evil demonic specters And with that, we can begin to identify these principalities and powers and pray that they will be taken down. And that's what we need to pray, that these powers will be identified and taken down.
Well, it's interesting that our research, both Aim for Truth and Americans for Innovation and Mike and the Miners and Tyla's group, as well as Betsy Ross's group and her team and the Conclave, all of us came in through the tentacles of the octopus of the evil Pilgrim Society. Now, we had heard about it, we knew about it, but we didn't have the details. Now we have the details. So whether you study Eustace Mullins or you study Carol Quigley, or you study John Coleman, or you study whoever it is, it does not matter. We've looked at everything that people have sent us and tried to look in all the different corners. And what we find is that nobody reveals the Pilgrim Society for who they are. And they are the deep state. They're the secret government of America. They're the founders of the SES, really, in essence, because that's the way that they work. They're carrying on the traditions of the Viennese bankers and the entire evil of the City of London that John just pointed out, that square mile in London called the City of London, which is a corporation that basically controls the economics of the world. So the Pilgrim Society need to be called out for who they are. And right now they're a 501c3. And just as John pointed out, the world is controlled through NGOs and particularly by the philanthropy that funds those NGOs. And so we need to bust the Pilgrims for being a very political machine that is British oriented, that connects to all of those tentacles that we had researched, whether it be the Crown agents or whether it be Serco or whether it be you name it, Kinetic or Muriel or Purbright, all of the revelations that we've been bringing forth. Now it's a capstone on it, is to see this is the place where the Pilgrims got more than a foothold. They got complete control, and they're still in control to this very day. And the CFR is still working. DARPA is still working. NQTEL is still working. The Privy Council members have their fingers in everything from our elections with Smartmatic, SGO Corporation or SGO Smartmatic, or the Canadian Dominion, or the OPTEC, which was created by the United Nations. It's all goes back to the Brits. And I'm sorry to have to say it. We need to sever our relationship. Not sorry. We need to sever the Five Eyes relationship. And we need to realize that our worst enemy is the British monarchy.